Welcome back. Jack Ebling here, Ebling and You, 1320 WILS. We've been talking to economists this week, and we'll continue to do that. And one of my favorites today joins us, Charles Ballard, MSU professor of economics, one of the best teachers you will find anywhere, and world-renowned with some of his economic theories. And Charlie, I want to talk to you a little bit about taxes. And we're talking now about the Bush-era tax cuts. It looks as if there is considerable support for having those evaporate on some hand, but a lot of people are only interested in seeing what happens for the middle class and not have those tax cuts stay in effect for the top 2% of the population.
There are several issues that are going on here. One is just the income distribution issue. A very large proportion of those tax cuts benefited a very small group at the way top of the income distribution, and I think that's a legitimate thing to be worried about, because one of the biggest stories in our economy in the last 35 years has been that all the income growth has been at the top, and so the tax cuts that disproportionately benefit the folks at the top, that further widens the gap between the rich and poor. Another one, there's concern, and I think it's legitimate concern, about whether you want to raise taxes when we're still in a sort of a fragile economy.
Right.
Now, I think that by far the worst is over. My sense is that we could raise taxes and not send the economy into a double dip recession.
Mm-hmm.
Then the other one is just the long-term deficit issue,
right,
which I think we've all got to worry about. If it were up to me, I would go ahead and raise, go back to the pre-Bush tax cut tax rates, certainly on the top 2%, which is basically what the big argument is about.
We're talking about 39% in the Clinton era, right?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. Down, and it was down to 35 for the marginal tax rate. That adds up to $700 billion over 10 years. But you got to remember also that the cut point that we're arguing about is people with incomes greater than $250,000. Now, a lot of folks with incomes of $250,000 say, gosh, I'm just plain folks. I'm just middle class struggling to make it. But
right,
really,
right,
you're pretty far up in the income distribution. Honestly, a lot of folks with $150,000,
$200,000, right,
are doing pretty well. And given that I'm very concerned about the deficit for the long term, I think we're going to have to do some combination of raising revenues or cutting back on our expenditures.
I think one thing that a lot of people do not understand is, let's say someone is making $500,000 a year, the first $250,000 would still be taxed at the other rate.
That's exactly right.
And then once you get into anything over $250,000, now you're being taxed at a marginally higher rate.
Right. A lot of people have trouble with the whole distinction between a marginal tax rate. It's the tax rate on an additional dollar of income. It's not that we suddenly tax you on your first dollar of income.
Right.
I remember somebody who said, oh, I don't want to take a bonus because that'll push me into a higher tax bracket, confusing the marginal tax rate, which says that it only applies to the extra dollars. It doesn't apply to the first dollar.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of confusion about that. But more than that, I think the big argument here, the biggest one, is over the income distribution. Because why you've got everybody's concerned about deficits, although most people, you know, they give lip service to deficit reduction. It's sort of like when people want to lose weight, but they don't want to either get more exercise or eat less food. Our approach to deficits is often, yeah, we want less deficits, but we don't want to raise taxes or cut spending. So
right.
But the big I think ideological divide is that those on the right side of the political spectrum are okay with the increase in income inequality, and those in the middle toward the left are worried about the increase in income inequality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about the theory, and you hear this from Republicans and those leaning to the right, that if people make more money at the top, eventually it will, as we heard many times, trickle down and we'll all be beneficiaries. If that's been happening over the past few years, as it seems to be, with the increase in income disparity, we haven't always seen this.
No, I think it's there are very great limits to the extent to which if you give a dollar to Bill Gates, it helps the rest of us. For the most part, if you give a dollar to Bill Gates, it helps Bill Gates. Now, Bill, of course, is a nice guy, and he gives a lot of his money to charity.
Right.
But Bill Gates, I'm using him sort of as the poster
sure.
child for the very affluent.
Right.
And the very affluent folks, an awful lot of them, you know, we saw as we took a closer look at the Wall Street follies in the wake of the meltdown of Lehman Brothers and so on, we saw that a lot of these folks, they have five homes, you know, they've got a home in Sun Valley and a home in Hawaii and a home in France, and there was the guy who worked for Lehman Brothers who took the helicopter to work every day.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of that is just consumption expenditure on the part of the top folks. The argument is not completely without merit. Certainly, anything that you do for somebody is going to have some ripple effects on the rest of us, but I think it's overstated.
What about the idea, Charlie, that in the Reagan era, when he took office, I believe the top tax rate was 70%, and back in the Eisenhower administration, it was over 90%.
It was 91% until 1963. And John Kennedy came to office saying that we should have a tax cut to stimulate the economy, and that's what we got, and the top tax rate came down to 70. And then Ronald Reagan, even though he used rather different rhetoric, his policies were very similar to the tax cut policies of Kennedy, and that brought the top rate down to 50. Now the top rate is 35.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had a long period of very, very substantial reduction, And one thing that I think we need to remember is that the economy didn't collapse even with much higher tax rates than we now see.
All right. The question that is, I'm sure, on the minds of a lot of our listeners is, what does this mean to me? I'm not making more than $250,000 a year. So whether those tax advantages are extended to them, what does that mean to those who are not making that amount of money?
Well, I think directly it doesn't mean very much to you at all, because right now nobody seems to be talking about raising the taxes, that is, rolling back the Bush-era tax cuts for anybody but those at the top.
Right.
And so the average citizen would have no change in his or her tax bill. But looking down the road, I think we all have to think that it will be a disaster of the first order if we don't sooner or later get our fiscal house in order.
We are going to need cuts, and we are going to need increased revenue if we ever hope to get out of this.
Absolutely. In fact, here, let me go on record. Please raise my taxes and cut my benefits. I know that's not a popular thing to say.
Right.
But, you know, Greece and now Ireland, and there's a fear that Portugal and Spain may have these crises. Well, the U.S. isn't there yet, but if we borrow $1 trillion a year from the rest of the world year after year after year, sooner or later we'll get to the point where we just can't borrow anymore, and that'll be a really ugly day of reckoning.
A trillion here and a trillion there, and eventually you got real money.
Pretty
right?
soon you're talking about real money, that's right.
Charlie, thanks so much for joining us. As always, you've illuminated the situation.
Well, thanks a lot, Jack. It's my pleasure.
All right.